Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, October 18th, and oh man, the waiver wire is pretty disgusting this week. It's not like, hey, there's no like, even, can we debate, Kenneth Walker, is that even really an ad? There's none of that this week. It's quite a bit of a mess. Here to help us hopefully clean up that mess, as he does every week, is the count of roster consolidation himself, Mr. Andy Behrens. Andy, the Skylar Thompson fan club, how are we feeling at this point?
Oh, yeah, that went well. I'm still recovering from the insults lobbed at me by Minty during Fantasy Football Live. I've broken down a few times in the hours since the show, but I'll try to make it through. Not only is it a brutal week for pickups, it is a terrible bye week, right? The Eagles are off. The Rams are off. The Bills are off. The Vikings are off. So that's five of the top 10 wide receivers on the season, plus Devontae Smith, who's like number 19, number 20, like, it's terrible. It's bad. So that hits at the absolute worst time because we have an absolutely disgusting collection of names to get through today.
Yeah, it's pretty dusty out there, that's for sure. But, good timing because we actually have a lot of news to talk about off the top. So let's get right into that. I definitely said, I think I probably talked about it on the podcast last night. I know I wrote about it in an article that, like, who the F is trading for Robbie Anderson when he has a big fat salary? He hasn't played that well in like a year and a half. He's actually really only had like maybe one and a half great-ish. I'll say very, not even great. Great is doing it too much. Very good-ish seasons throughout the course of his career. Oh, and by the way, he's like fighting with coaches on the sideline. Well, don't worry. The Arizona Cardinals will be the one to swoop in here and trade a sixth-round pick in 2024 and a seventh in 2025, which, I mean, you might as well have just sent the damn, like, bag of recycled glass for Robbie Anderson at that point. Give me a break here. 2025, that's not even a real year at this point, okay? Anyways, the Cardinals trade for Robbie Anderson. He will be playing for them. As soon as I saw the news, Andy, I was like, oh, man, Marquise Brown's, you know, injury must be pretty bad. Scott and I talked about how they play this week on Thursday. That's a tough scene. Well, Marquise Brown, according to Adam Schefter, suffered a potentially season-ending foot injury on Sunday. He's undergoing further testing to determine the extent of the injury, but, you know, that's not great. Our friend Edwin Porras from Fantasy Points pointed out that Hollywood Brown has a history of a Lisfranc, which made him vulnerable to reoccurrence. And it just is a bummer because Hollywood is having a great year. They were just about to get DeAndre Hopkins back, and that injury came on like a pointless heave at the end of the game. So, lot to unpack here, Andy. Let's start with like Robbie Anderson actually going to the Cardinals, and how much does this move the needle for you?
Yeah, you're so right. It was, first of all, it was hilarious that there were even reports that Robbie Anderson was on the trade block, because of course Robbie Anderson is on the trade block. Like, you don't need to say it. Guys like Robbie Anderson are always available for trade. You come with any interest whatsoever for Robbie Anderson, you can take him off our hands. And then, like, obviously he did himself no favors in terms of trade value by literally getting into a shouting match with his own coaches on the sideline, getting kicked out of a game by his coaching staff. And yet, of course, if there's a franchise that is known for as much dysfunction as the Panthers, it would be the Cardinals. So they came knocking. He's not a direct replacement for Hollywood Brown, obviously. And man, Brown was having such a good year. Not that it was going to hold necessarily with DeAndre coming back, but he was on pace for like 120 catches, huge yardage total. He was seeing, target share was fantastic. Again, that was about to change in week seven. I don't know how they fold in Robbie Anderson, you know, on a short week like this. I can't imagine if he's active, he's going to be active for much, you know. How many snaps can he really play? How many plays can he really seriously be a part of? But down the road, second half of the season, he might have a little bit of value. Rondale Moore and DeAndre Hopkins are the guys who like are actually known to the team and to the quarterback. And I just, you know, this is such a bad waiver week that I had to write up Robbie Anderson. I felt, you know, kind of icky doing it because I have very limited expectations for him. He's available in about 90% of Yahoo leagues. And certainly if you're in, I don't know, a 16 teamer, you should be going after Robbie Anderson, but I would not. Nobody should be under the impression that Robbie Anderson can just slide into, you know, Hollywood Brown's responsibilities and just do that because he happens to be fast himself.
Yeah, I mean, not similar players at all, really.
No.
You know, Anderson is like sort of a linear player. Like he does run crossing routes really well, but that's not really like Hollywood Brown's game necessarily. Brown is a really good zone coverage beater, and you know Anderson's never really been that good. I just think Anderson's kind of a bit of an overrated player, you know, generally. I don't think he's that good, but I guess I'm a little more bullish on. I mean, look, I don't like, we'll talk about this trade here in just a second. Put that aside for a little bit here because there's a lot to break down there. But I think from a fantasy standpoint, he does walk into a good bit of opportunity. He's not going to be a direct replacement to Brown, but I think he's like, I think he's roster worthy in a 12 teamer, even just to kind of figure it out. Like, so you would take Rondale Moore over Robbie Anderson rest of season then, I gather.
Yeah, I would. He's not somebody who has to, you know, learn a new playbook on the fly. He's not somebody that they have to blend into the offense. He's part of it. He's been pretty good the last 2 weeks. He's a weird receiver himself, right? He's and you've talked about that extensively, but the volume has been there. I would expect the volume to continue to be there. I'm just not sure how much it's reasonable to ask of Robbie Anderson at this point. So sure, I would take more over him. It's not, but that's not to say that I think, I don't know, there's people out there that are still rostering like Bears receivers. There's people out there that are still you're in a 14 team league and you want to roster Robbie Anderson. Okay, I get it. I have very limited expectations for this player. Maybe that's just the stink of Carolina's offense that's still on him. And maybe he's a bit of a reclamation project. I don't know, but I'm not overly enthusiastic about this. I would definitely take the people who have already been part of the Arizona offense before I reach for Anderson.
Yeah, I'll have to think about it a little more. I'm still, I can't look at Rondale Moore's 3.4 air yards per target and not like. kind of grimace a little bit over the last 2 weeks.
It's trending up though, wasn't it just 2 points?
It was
like a week ago.
It was 2.3 the week before. It was 4.4 this
moon.
Week. So we are. I mean, maybe to like maybe to the clouds. Maybe not quite all the way to the moon, but we're getting close to the clouds here. We'll break the atmosphere at some point. We might get out of Earth's orbit eventually, but I mean. I think I got to think about it a little more because the volume has been there. Like if he's going to be that type of low air yards per target player, Rondale Moore, he does have to see great volume. Now that's going to change. Like over the last 2 weeks, 19 targets for Marquise Brown, 18 targets for Rondale Moore, 20 targets for Zach Ertz. I actually like this whole Robbie Anderson situation, this whole Marquise Brown exiting situation does make me feel better about Zach Ertz, despite the fact that, you know, our buddy DeAndre Hopkins is coming back. One end zone target for Rondale Moore, that's fine. I got to think about it a little more. I'm probably with you that if push comes to shove, I'll take the guy who also is in his second year. Like I said, Anderson, not that good of a player, kind of limited. Like I thought when people were getting, you know, somebody came back to me yesterday when I was saying like, oh yeah, I bet teams are just lining up to trade for Robbie Anderson as he's like, you know, yelling at his coaches on the sidelines. Somebody's like, hey man, look at, you know, if Deshaun Watson's taught us anything, it's like, okay, well, there's a difference between a team selling their soul for a potential franchise quarterback versus like maybe a decent wide receiver three. Like, I think that's the best we can hope for here. But
yeah,
it does at least make me feel slightly better about the Cardinals offense in totality, that like they're not just going to lose the speed threat altogether. But I do just want to point this out, man. This is a pure desperation move by Cliff Kingsbury. Since he got there in 2019, they have spent the following picks on wide receivers. Or just let's just go pass catchers. A sixth-round pick on Keyshawn Johnson in 2019, a fourth-round pick on Hakeem Butler in 2019, a second-round pick on Andy Isabella in 2019,
wow,
a 2021 second-round pick on Rondale Moore, and a 2022 second-round pick, 55th overall, on Trey McBride, a tight end, despite signing Zach Ertz to a contract extension. We obviously know they make a big trade to get DeAndre Hopkins during that span. We know they made a big trade to get Marquise Brown in that span. It's like, hey, I don't think stock in the wide receiver room is the answer here. I mean, maybe if they had actually picked some good players in at any point in 2019, that would have helped. But man, I just, this just like I said, reeks of pure desperation by a team that I think is circling the drain here a little bit. And not good vibes there on the Arizona Cardinals.
You got me angry about that Trey McBride landing spot all over again. I thought I'd fully processed that and totally forgotten it. But that's brutal that he landed there behind Zach. Zach Ertz, obviously a good player, volume player, but McBride is good. And it's a slow developing position, and this is probably fine. But he was somebody who in the right landing spot definitely could have found value.
Yeah, it really is a bummer. Thoughts from the Carolina? By the way, one more thing on the Cardinals. Sources say, according to Ian Rapoport, that the fear is that Justin Pugh, also a starting offensive lineman, suffered a season-ending injury. So, like I said, Cardinals just kind of circling the drain here. Just tough scene for Arizona overall. Any thoughts on the Panthers side of this? Like, Andy, by the way, is laughing on the other end of the podcast. Like, it's pretty, here, so
seems pretty hopeless. Like, there's nobody, you know, it's not like Robbie Anderson was doing enough with Carolina that we can be like, oh man, where's all that volume going to go? There wasn't any volume there. There wasn't any production there. They literally didn't complete a pass to a wide receiver this past week, other than DJ Moore, who I believe finished with like 3 for 7 yards. It is an absolutely bankrupt offensive environment outside of McCaffrey. Like, it's just McCaffrey. You're in a 10-team league and you want to drop DJ Moore, you probably should have done it a week ago. I don't know. He's got no value.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It's unfortunate because, you know, Robbie Anderson, I guess we're going to see more of Terrace Marshall. That's probably not going to be a good thing. Marshall had one of the worst rookie seasons out there in terms of like a reception perception standpoint. You know, Laviska Shenault, I guess we'll see more of that guy, but you know, I don't have any hope for any of these players. Like, PJ Walker literally averaged negative air yards per target. Like, even that makes Rondale Moore blush even a little bit when you see PJ Walker's air yards per attempt.
Like, we really need DJ Moore to land somewhere else. Like, he's the Panthers receiver that needs to get dealt. And it's almost certainly not happening. And then the places that, you know, you can imagine are not great landing spots necessarily, right? Or it's better if he's with the Giants, but how good is that really? I don't know. There's no great answer here.
There's no great answer here. There's no hope here either. One more thing on fast receivers, just because I'm seeing this right now. According to his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, DeSean Jackson is scheduled to visit the Ravens on Tuesday. He's 36 years old. Jackson did confirm this past week that he wants to continue playing. Don't be rushing out there to pick up DeSean Jackson, everybody, just because it's the waiver podcast. But that is at least mildly interesting. And it feels like the right thing for, you know, DeSean Jackson to end up with Lamar Jackson. And how has he not been a Raven at some point in his career? Like, all of the veteran receivers the Ravens have cycled through throughout the past decade, how has DeSean Jackson not landed there at least once? That does feel like something they actually need, though. I mean, Lamar Jackson they desperately need Rashad Bateman back. I saw this from Rich Rebar this morning. Lamar against the blitz in weeks 1 through 3, 83.3% completion rate, 12 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. The last 3 weeks, when they've been playing with like DeMarcus Robinson, Devin Duvernay, and Tylan Wallace, and not Rashad Bateman for the most part, because Bateman got hurt in the middle of that week 4 game, 50% completion rate, 4.8 yards per attempt, 2 TDs, 2 interceptions. So I'm not going to say that DeSean Jackson is going to be a fantasy factor, but he could. I do think he can still help a team. Like, there were moments when he helped the Raiders last year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, he struck me his entire career as a guy that, like, every season there's a rookie that we comp to DeSean Jackson, and there's just never been another guy who's really been like DeSean Jackson, right? Like, I'm struggling to even come up with another player that gets comped as often and has as few real life comps. No. Like, he's still somebody that has to be accounted for.
All right, next piece of news item here. Carson Wentz is facing a recovery of roughly 4 to 6 weeks, according to Ian Rapoport and Michael Garofalo of the NFL Network. injured reserve is a consideration. He's currently in LA meeting with a hand specialist because of his fractured ring finger. Garofalo said it'll be Taylor Heinicke for the Commanders with these next four games on deck. Versus the Packers, at Colts, versus Vikings, at Eagles. ODU's finest, Taylor Heinicke, is back in our lives. I think we could see Sam Howell at some point, but, I mean, Sam Howell is a fourth-round rookie. They've won with Heinicke in the past, even if he's obviously a very flawed player. So, Andy, what's your reaction to this one? Because there's a lot of guys in this offense that we obviously care about for fantasy.
Yeah, Wentz was such a roller coaster that I don't know that it's a huge downgrade for anybody. I don't want to pretend there. I think Heinicke is mildly interesting in the deepest of leagues, certainly in any sort of super flex league. You have to grab him. He actually rushed for over 300 yards last year. Like, there's a little bit of rushing upside here. Again, I don't think it's a huge downgrade from Wentz. He'll disappoint in a different way than Carson Wentz disappoints, is I guess how I think of it. But he's not, he's not an answer. But can he still support some viable pass catchers? Yeah, sure. That's definitely in play. So not a huge downgrade for anyone, which is not to say that Commanders receivers aren't worrisome right now.
I understand why the Commanders talked themselves into Wentz. I mean, Ron Rivera, we haven't talked about the Thursday night game because there's not a lot to say there from that Thursday night game, but
brutal.
There was a lot of stuff that happened after the game, right? Like Ron Rivera getting super upset fiery in that press conference, like saying, it was ridiculous to, I do like how he said, I looked at the analytics about Carson Wentz and decided like he was our guy, in a much more, again, fiery way. But he went out of his way to sort of say, like, this is the guy I wanted to bring in. I understand why they wanted a player with the physical ability of Carson Wentz over a guy like with the physical ability of Taylor Heinicke. But to defend my guy ODU's finest here for a second, like, I'm going to try at least. This offense now versus what it was last year from a player standpoint, like, could not be any more different. You know, I said many times last year, it was like Terry McLaurin and the preseason boys last year. They've got Curtis Samuel, who didn't have the greatest game on Thursday night, but has been a really good player for them throughout the course of the season, is a very good player overall. They should get Jahan Dotson back in the next, if not this week, the next week, whatever. You know, I think Heinicke can operate this offense a little bit better. And certainly for Terry McLaurin, they were just, I think, because of Wentz's skill set, using McLaurin so far down the field as like exclusively a deep threat. I mean, they ain't doing that with Taylor Heinicke because he cannot push the ball downfield. So I actually I think this is actually a pretty decent buy low opportunity for Terry McLaurin, because we've seen it's not great. It's not the best it could be. It wasn't going to be the best it could be with Carson Wentz either, but we've at least seen what McLaurin life is like with Taylor Heinicke before.
No, it's a really good call. I like that you mentioned the Rivera press conference, which still felt like him just sort of trying to climb out of the hole that he dug himself with the comments about the quarterback position, like early in the week, right? But a really weird note to go out on in a press conference after a win. That is a well thought out opinion on Terry McLaurin, and you can tell that you are someone who probably has a lot of Terry McLaurin shares.
It's too late. It's too late for those teams. Nothing to do about those.
And you've needed to talk yourself into this being somehow beneficial to McLaurin, but I can see it. I definitely can see it.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be beneficial, like I said, but it wouldn't be. It's not the worst thing in the world that can happen. And, unfortunately, like, this is just the cycle that we're in with Terry McLaurin. Well, we're trying to justify like, oh, this is maybe not, but like, this is kind of actually good news. And I don't really know how we get out of that cycle with Terry McLaurin at this point, unless Washington somehow, I don't know where the rest of their season is going to go. But I understand for folks out there who are like, why not Sam Howell? Why not Sam Howell? This team, and this obviously, this coach does not believe that this team is cooked, that it's done, and it's like time to get a look at the future. If you could take anything from Ron Rivera saying that he's the effing guy, that's where we're at this point. So, yeah, I think that they'll try
to
win
message
a few games
to a team if you do that in October, right? Like, it's a bit early to just draw the curtain on the season and say, okay, we're playing young guys and kind of sort of trying to lose.
Yeah, and like this schedule's not full of cupcakes either, like Packers, Colts, Vikings, Eagles. So there is certainly a chance that we see Sam Howell at halftime of one of these games or something like that. But to go out right out there with a guy that has never played in the NFL before. Like, think what you want about Heinicke. I've been hard on Heinicke in terms of how he limits an offense because he just has no vertical passing ability. They, like I said, they've won games with him. I understand why. And this is probably better news than, you know, it could have been for a guy like Brian Robinson, who looks like he's the clear-cut starting RB here. So, yeah, for me, I think that, like, that's just where we're at with the Washington Commanders. Last piece of news here before we go into Sunday Night Football. Rams left tackle Joe Noteboom tore his Achilles tendon on Sunday and will be out for the season. The Rams are going into their bye week. That's nice. They need to get healthy, but now this is one of their established guys who I think he's played the entire season, Joe Noteboom, although he's had some injury flare-ups here and there as well. Now he's out for the rest of the season. It's just this unit's not getting any better anytime soon.
No, and it was a clear weakness, right? That gets a whole lot worse through this news. This is bad for everyone. This is just terrible. This is absolutely terrible news. Like, they couldn't keep Matt Stafford clean. They couldn't, you know, they weren't really opening a lot of holes for the run game as it was, and this just all gets worse.
Yeah, all gets worse. We'll talk Rams, obviously, after their bye week as well. All right, Sunday Night Football, Eagles 26, Cowboys 17. We could talk about the Eagles here in a second, but just on the Cowboys, man, this certainly felt like this game was coming at some point. You know, this is Cooper Rush's stretch is exactly what you want out of a backup quarterback. He revealed to you some of the strengths of the team overall. Like, hey, they can still run the ball really well. Even if everybody has their complaints about Zeke, they can still run the ball pretty well when they want to. They can lean on that. Their defense can be the identity of the team. And they have some more talent on the offensive roster than you probably thought coming into the year with a guy like Noah Brown stepping up, you know, CeeDee Lamb handling a boatload of targets. And also, like, this is something I hope they keep doing in the Dak Prescott era once he gets back. There are like some easy buttons that they were pressing with Cooper Rush, you know, like there are more screens, there's more play action, there's more just layup targets, and, you know, not having like the hardest offense possible just because Dak Prescott can handle a really difficult pre-snap offense. I hope they keep some of that around, but like eventually with a backup quarterback, you run out of time. And I felt like this was a team watching them last night that had run out of time with their backup quarterback.
Yeah, if anybody was going to try to force a Cooper Rush versus Dak Prescott conversation on us, I'm not sure that they were. But if they were, that's totally out the window. It's actually it's a loss where I wouldn't feel terrible as a Cowboys fan, right? So it's still a competitive game. The defense still has, you know, just an absolute game wrecker in Micah Parsons. He was phenomenal. There's just a lot of reasons to feel pretty good about the Cowboys roster. And to your point about the run game, you know, I know it's so common for fantasy analysts to say that Zeke is dust and that they have to transition to Tony Pollard and all that. And Pollard certainly has a lot of juice. Zeke, I don't think Zeke is done. Like, this is, I don't know. Every time I see Zeke in a primetime spot, he looks fine to me. Like, he had some really nice runs between the tackles. He's not rushing title Zeke anymore. He's not like rookie year, second year Zeke anymore. But, and he's, you know, listen, he's not, you know, a running back who is necessarily at this exact moment gonna fully earn his contract, but he earned it in the past, and he's playing fine. He's not a problem. And I don't know that Tony Pollard is somebody who would hold up to 28 touches a game or whatever the fantasy community wants to give him, right? Like, I think if your biggest problem with the Cowboys is that Zeke Elliott gets 15 to 20 touches, I don't know, that's sort of misplaced energy. It's gonna happen. They're paying him that way. The owner of the team is super into Zeke Elliott, and he's not cooked yet.
I completely agree with you. I mean, it's sort of usually with these guys, there's a reason that they don't give them that sort of touch load. Like, you know, sometimes obviously it's a misfire from the coaching staff. Like, for years, the Chiefs with Jamal Charles, they would have, you know, some, like, whatever was left of Thomas Jones, like, running ahead of Jamal Charles. But, you know, I don't think Tony Pollard is the next Jamal Charles, right? One of the most efficient runners of our era. I don't think that's necessarily what we got here. I think they've pretty much, like, they've gotten the best out of both players during this stretch, and there probably will be no situation where Zeke is just completely pushed to the side. Cause like you said last night, he's got good, like, he's a better grinder, I think, than Tony Pollard is at this point. And that sort of fits the identity of this team, which I think is a defensive first team. That is very apparent. There's no way that Tony Pollard is having those like between the tackle type of runs. And it is just funny. Anytime we get a primetime spot, like Twitter will erupt the moment that Tony Pollard does something awesome. But like, oh, there's a good play from Zeke. Nobody cares. Nobody
total silence. Yeah. Absolute silence when Zeke does anything. And there were a number of runs last night where like somebody's hitting Zeke or touching Zeke at the line of scrimmage and he's still getting 4 yards on the play. That's, you know, that doesn't look like anything spectacular, but it's pretty valuable. And there are plenty of running backs in the league right now who are not doing that. Like, talk to a Steelers fan about what happens when Najee Harris is met at the line of scrimmage, or a Bengals fan about what is happening lately when Joe Mixon is met at the line of scrimmage, right? Like, I don't know. Zeke is getting tough yards, and that's valuable.
Yeah. Mike McCarthy had a couple of quotes, I think it was last week or heading into a couple weeks ago, where he basically said, like, that made it sound that he had taken more of like an ownership over the team, and that the identity, like what the identity was going to be from like the defensive first perspective, and then how Kellen Moore needed to adjust with that. I know that like it's very easy to rip on Mike McCarthy, and I've certainly done it. We've all done it, but I think I'm hoping that that identity continues, because this type of team, the way we've seen it with, again, CeeDee Lamb, double-digit targets here again, you know, the running game looking pretty good, like some of these other guys, sprinkle in Noah Brown, sprinkle in Michael Gallup. That's what this team kind of needs to be when Dak gets back. So it's like, okay, the version of the Cowboys we've seen with Cooper Rush, good for fantasy. Now let's just get like a better quarterback, and Dak Prescott is certainly a better quarterback. I think that's what we're looking for. Prescott after the game said he's planning to return in Week 7 against the Lions. That would be a wonderful matchup for him to return to. Let's talk about the Eagles side of this, man. Andy, I am just so upset at myself for, you know, having, oh my God, like there, I think I'm not sure like what the final vote count was, what the final ballot looked like, whether I had DJ Moore at wide receiver 12 or AJ Brown at wide receiver 13, but I flip flopped those two guys in that spot a ton. Right. And it's, I am furious at myself. I mean, praying for forgiveness at wide receiver church. Like, how many prayers for forgiveness can I put up there? Oh, by the way, I need about 50 more prayers for burying Devontae Smith. I know these guys didn't have like the greatest game or anything, but they both scored touchdowns. That both of their plays were like, gotta have it, make life easier for our quarterback, Jalen Hurts. And I am just so mad at myself for not using my imagination more, because I would say it, I would make the case for it, but then my rankings never reflected it. And therefore, you know, none of my teams have AJ Brown on it. Then none of my teams have Devontae Smith on it, despite the fact, like, I know those guys are stone cold ballers. I just never allowed myself to be imaginative enough to get them in drafts, that Jalen Hurts could take a step forward, that this offense could be different than what it was last year.
Man, when Hurts is playing this well and passing this well, like you think about the scoring play to Devontae Smith, what the hell is the defense supposed to do, right? You either like sink and try to check Devontae Smith and allow a walk-in touchdown to Jalen Hurts, basically a walk-in touchdown because he's so damn good. Like, They just put you in some pretty unsolvable problems when they get the numbers right. You know, that was just such a good play. It was such a great drive. This is a really good team. Hurts didn't even have like a particularly great game. You know, he didn't explode necessarily as a rusher, but they get enough done against, again, a really good Dallas defense. Like, I'm ready to see this rematch again. Both receivers super impressive on relatively low volume. You're so right about the. I'm trying to think now of exactly where I had DJ Moore. I don't know if I had him 13, 14 in the receiver ranks. Wherever it was obviously a huge misfire. And to your point about Devontae Smith, I had buried him as well. That was probably me not believing in. It was surely me not believing enough in Jalen Hurts as a passer. I just couldn't convince myself that this offense was going to support three guys, you know, because you have to roll in Dallas Goedert there too, right? They were supposed to support both AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and Goedert. Like, that just seemed, I don't know, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And Smith was the guy that I ended up burying, not entirely burying, but at least as a wide receiver 3, and he's clearly outperforming that. I think he's the wide receiver 19 or 20 right now.
Yeah. And it just is, it's so great when a team is just so concentrated between these three guys, you know, like all of them run a route on at least 90% of the dropbacks last night. 38% of the targets last night go to AJ Brown, 23.8% go to Devontae Smith, 23.8% goes to Dallas Goedert. Like nobody else is above 5%. Like that's exactly what you want in a fantasy offense. Good quarterback play, good supporting cast, and a concentrated set of volume. Like, I so regret not being more imaginative with how good this offense could be and how good it could be for fantasy. And even Miles Sanders, by the way, like I know I say this all the time, but that guy told us not to draft him. He was as wrong as all of us that didn't draft him because he's been great for fantasy. 18 carries against the Cowboys. He scores a touchdown. He has been one of the clear cut right answers in a dead zone group of running backs that, you know, has plenty of hits, has plenty of misses. Sanders has been one of the hits.
Yeah, he absolutely has been. You're so right about the sort of narrow usage tree here. It's like the way Atlanta used to be with like Julio and Roddy White and Tony Gonzalez and absolutely no one else involved, right? Except you also have this fantastic dual threat quarterback, Jalen Hurts, another guy who's been one of the right answers this season.
Yeah, like we're going to talk about the Jets later, and like compared to how spread out and low volume that group is, it's just absolutely killer for fantasy. Yep. So it's great to see the Eagles on the other end of that. All right, Andy and I are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to run through a bunch of dusty options on the waiver wire. All right, Andy, let's get it started with running back. Kenyon Drake leads the group. great.
And like really leads the group, like coming off. I don't know. I don't want to use adjectives that are too flowery here, too rosy, because it's still just Kenyon Drake. But he's got a great matchup coming up against Cleveland. Went over 100 yards, super efficient, broke off a long run. I don't know that he was touched on the long run. So I don't want to say that it was just like a highlight reel performance. I don't mean to say that, but we know that Baltimore is a pretty run committed team generally. And J.K. Dobbins like had to sort of go on the shelf in this game. This is 2 weeks in a row in which Drake has actually outsnapped Dobbins. There were reports after the game, not just reports that came straight from the coaches, that Dobbins, I believe the wording was that his knee had tightened up on him. Any sort of discomfort in the knee for J.K. Dobbins, not a great sign, obviously. And they got a lot out of Kenyon Drake, who every roster he shows up on, coaching staffs are very committed to Kenyon Drake. So they're clearly going to keep playing him again.
Except the Raiders, who are the one to actually pay him a bunch of money.
Right. They've got Cleveland coming up. Ramondre just had a day against Cleveland. Everybody's had a day against Cleveland all year, basically. They entered week six allowing over 5 yards per carry. It is a very friendly matchup. So I'm not going to be that surprised if Kenyon Drake gives us 70 yards and another touchdown. I don't think he's going to be an answer for fantasy managers throughout the season. But as a bye week placeholder, I think he's of moderate interest.
Yep, I think that makes a lot of sense. I just think that with J.K. Dobbins, like we talked about it with Scott last night, you are going to be at risk now that he has that type of like, oh, shoot, he's done for the rest of the day, or, you know, at any moment. And Drake seems to be the biggest beneficiary. I will mention Gus Edwards' name, though. He should be coming back here in a couple of weeks. If not, maybe this week, who knows? He at least looks like he's trending the right direction. Gus Edwards is a good player, man. Like, he might be a better running back right now than Kenyon Drake is. So at least keep him. I think he would probably fit in like our getting in early type of guys. Cause it's based on the sort of based on the lack of potency in the Ravens run game. It's probably and the way that it's taking him forever to, you know, get back in the mix here, you know, with Gus Edwards, it's probably not it's probably unlikely, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like, oh, wow, Gus Edwards is active and they just give him like 20 carries and he looks really good. I wouldn't be totally surprised, but at least keep that in the back of your mind. Other options at running back on the waiver wire, Andy.
Yeah, I suppose that we have to talk about Deion Jackson just because he had such a great game, caught a million targets in that thing. Looked really good. Did check out with a quad injury from which he did not return, but then later tweeted that he was all good. So he's probably fine moving forward. The obvious problem here is that he is not going to play ahead of Jonathan Taylor. He's probably not going to play ahead of Nyheim Hines. He's really somebody who moving forward is going to have sort of contingent value based on just when they can get back and whether they can get back to full strength. He's got Tennessee coming up. It's not a perfect matchup, but he's just looked really good the last 2 weeks in a row. And people are going to be interested in him, understandably so, because, again, it's such a bleak week in terms of waiver talent out there. And this is 2 weeks in a row that he's been good. I thought he was plainly better than Philip Lindsay in the Thursday night game. Yeah. And then he sort of consolidated power this past week. Just a really nice effort from him. We should note that Caleb Huntley actually out carried Tyler Allgeier, didn't out snap him. And he's also a pretty limited guy, right? He's like a power option. He's a north-south guy. He's probably not somebody that you're going to throw to very often. But Atlanta wants to run the ball. They run it well. And Caleb Huntley is still clearly a big part of the answer. It was funny. He ran the ball almost every time he was in the game. I want to say that he played 20 snaps and had 16 carries, right? So Huntley on the field is a pretty big tell in terms of what is about to happen. But it worked moderately well. But this is, I don't know. These are the options, people. I can't do any better for you at running back. So Huntley was interesting, probably not any sort of factor in PPR. I also want to mention that we are recording this before the Denver Chargers game, where it feels like something's going to pop, right? Like we're going to learn something important about the Broncos backfield, and it's going to be evident to everyone, right? I don't know as of this moment exactly how involved Latavius Murray is going to be. I don't know exactly how involved Mike Boone is going to be, but he looked really good in the Thursday nighter. And Melvin Gordon has some obvious problems attached to him. So there's an opportunity for one of the Denver backs to make some noise. And I think we also need to mention that Joshua Kelly has a pretty interesting, and I can't say anything that like you and his teammate Austin Eckler haven't already said about him. He's clearly got standalone value. He's clearly made a little bit of a leap as a player. He's the obvious number two there behind Austin. And he's not just somebody who has contingent value, right? Like he's probably going to see 8 to 12 touches in a normal week, which is going to be flex worthy as we get into some nasty buys.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you mentioned with Josh Kelly, we talked about it a lot with Austin. He had some good things to say. And even still, he's still only rostered in 18% of leagues as Josh Kelly. I mean, you're talking about these guys, Deion Jackson, Caleb Huntley, who probably don't have a ton of value going forward. Like Josh Kelly, if you've got to throw him out there during a bye week, and I hate to say this because they're playing tonight. I know, like, I'm cursing everything here, but... Yeah, I take my risk here. If you have to throw him out there like during a bye week, you've at least got a prayer that he gets into the end zone. So
yes,
I agree that those backs need to be rostered 100%. I mean, there's so many guys we yap about like as stashes, and it's funny, Andy. Like, you know, actually, I'm gonna save that till the getting in early section. So we'll keep moving here at wide receiver, Andy. We've got some rookies here to talk about. Alec Pierce, who kind of had his day saved by the game-winning touchdown, but it was like a classic Alec Pierce play. He's been so good, especially in contested situations. He was very good in a contested situation to win the game for the Colts on Sunday. Got Wandale Robinson, who popped in for a touchdown. Good on you for calling him out as a sleeper if you were disgusting enough, broken enough as a human being to want to play a Giants receiver. And Tyquan Thornton has popped routinely for the Patriots here the last couple of weeks since he's been activated.
Yeah, Tyquan was pretty exciting. Didn't actually see a ton of targets, but scored both as a rusher and a receiver. The Browns were absolutely pathetic in that game. So a huge hat tip to the opposing defense in that one. But Thornton has some speed, right? Like he was his high school sprint times are pretty legit. I think he was a 10.6 guy in the 100. Like he's fast. He's pretty fun. I don't know that New England moving forward is gonna, obviously Jacoby Myers is the receiver that we want in almost any kind of scoring format. You're in a deeper league, though. I think Tyquan Thornton, fairly interesting. Wandale, super interesting to me because he was such a sensational college player. Just really, really fun. 100 catches in his final season at Kentucky. Really just like live wire quick. And he barely played, but like the snaps were memorable, right? I think he only played 15 snaps in that game, but caught a short touchdown. Looked really good, like fun play design. He is, and there, like, I should not even have to make the argument that there are targets there for the taking in New York, right? Because the receiving corps is just so dreadful. So if he illustrates that he's healthy, and he can really be a difference maker, he is going to play a lot more. And as for Pierce, he got a big bump in terms of roster percentage week over week, but he's still sort of frustratingly eligible for this conversation, right? He's below 40% rostered. And this is now, I know it's difficult to like wrap your mind around, like, do I really want to go out of my way to find new opportunities to invest in the Colts offense? I don't know. This is 4 weeks in a row that he's made some fantasy noise, that he's been a totally startable player. Ryan has already been taking deep shots to him. Like, that's not new. Yeah. We've seen that throughout the season. You and I talked about it before. He is, by NFL standards, an elite athlete. Like, among NFL players, he's phenomenal. He's got a 40-inch vertical. He's tall. He's got 4.4 speed. Like, he's got all the athletic attributes that you could possibly want. He should win contested catches with that sort of combination of traits. I'm just kind of all in on him. I've got him every place that he was available, and we're into a bye week now where 5 of the top 10 fantasy wide receivers are out and like 6 of the top 20. Like, your Eagles are not with us this week. Justin Jefferson, not with us this week. No Cooper Kupp. No, like, this is a hard one. And he's been a reliable player for the last 4 weeks. And maybe the Colts just settle into throwing the ball 45 plus times a game, in which case he's going to see, 8 targets a week. He's just a really talented player.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask you, because I wanted to get your opinion about the Colts and the way they kind of changed last week. I ran through the no huddle, plays and all that stuff with Scott last night, like the way they changed that offense from that degree. They made a little bit of a tweak on the offensive line with Matt Pryor at guard. But you've got, Deion Jackson in the running back section. You got Alec Pierce here. Spoiler alert, you have Matt Ryan in the quarterback section. So are you buying this change in the offensive identity? Because I do think, to bring it back to what I said yesterday with Scott, like, Nyheim Hines has talked about previously how difficult it is to try to figure out an identity in the first month of the season with a new damn quarterback every year. Is this is sort of what I thought the Colts would look like with Matt Ryan. And, Alec Pierce, I don't know that he's ever going to surpass Paris Campbell, who, by the way, I know we're not going to talk about Paris Campbell here. Like, it's probably best.
Man, that guy plays a lot. That guy plays a lot.
Hey, 100% of the dropbacks he was running around yesterday. And that was a ton of dropbacks, right, with Matt Ryan. So, but the way Alec Pierce is used, we talked about Alec Pierce in the preseason, Andy. What did I tell you? Like, from a college perspective, how did he win? Slants, goes, and contested catches. You know what he's been doing so far really well in the NFL, Andy? Slants, goes, contested catches. I say this with rookies a lot, George Pickens, like, knocking people over in the run game. He looks like Georgia George Pickens. Alec Pierce looks like Cincinnati. Yeah. Alec Pierce so far in the NFL. So even if he never gets the playing time bump that you would probably like to see over Paris Campbell, because of the way he's used, he can still get home for fantasy if the Colts continue to play this way.
Matt Ryan is also doing, and we've talked about this, he's doing the bad quarterback thing where you like lock onto certain targets, right? And Alec Pierce has been one of those guys. Like, he's his F it, I'm going to chuck it downfield to Alec Pierce option, like, we've seen that multiple times this season. I don't know when we're going to get a fully operational Jonathan Taylor again. So I kind of think that this is their offensive identity right now. I mean, how many pass attempts did Ryan finish with? Was it like 57? He was closing in on 60 there, right? Like,
I thought it was 58, but I can't remember.
Yeah, we're not going to get that every week, but we're probably going to get 40, 45, which is enough to support, whatever they try to do.
58 passes for Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. And Ryan has, Ryan has looked awful at various points this year. He was absolutely atrocious in the Thursday game in particular. But they're still letting him chuck it, and that is going to be good, obviously, for Pittman and then also for Pierce.
Somebody tweeted at me yesterday that, like, again, based not the athleticism for Pierce is so much higher than Mike Williams, but he could be like a Mike Williams type of player, right? Could Alec Pierce? And, like, I think Michael Pittman is very much like a Keenan. I've called him like a Keenan Allen Robinson hybrid. I could see him being that sort of pairing for, the latter version of Phillip Rivers' career with those two guys. And I think Matt Ryan sort of, there's a lot of connective tissue there because of the two teams, yada, yada. But, like, I could see that being, and then that leaves Paris Campbell to play you know, the rando that pops up, like a DeAndre Carter pops up for the damn Chargers every now and again. You know, a Jalen Guyton pops up every now and again for the Chargers. I could see that being, you know, the play style approach. 91.9% of snaps in the shotgun for Matt Ryan. That was a change what's the point of having Matt Ryan drop back under center, right? It's the same thing we talk about with like a Justin Fields. Like once he hits the top of that drop back, he's getting sacked. Matthew Stafford, same thing. Hits top of that drop back, he's getting sacked. Matt Ryan's the same way. At this point, he's more of a statue by 1,000 degrees than those two guys that we just mentioned there. So I hope this is a permanent change. Other wide receivers you've got on the waiver list here, Andy, it's mostly like goofball veterans, but you might as well tell us about it.
Yeah, we mentioned Robbie Anderson earlier, so I won't go into that again. Chase Claypool's coming off a game. I feel compelled to mention him. I mean, 90 plus yards and a touchdown. It seems like each week Pittsburgh is going to deliver, like there's going to be one guy who has a fantasy week that is worth talking about. And this past week, it happened to land on Claypool. It's obviously going to land on Johnson again. It's going to land on Pickens again. I don't know that they're going to be able to support multiple pass catchers. The guy that I'm probably most interested in, and listen, he's got some headwinds coming up because Josh Reynolds is about to face Dallas. That's pretty good defense. At some point, Jameson Williams comes back to this offense. That could be a problem for Josh Reynolds. But right now, Jared Goff kind of has radar lock on him. He's seen a ton of targets over his last three games. He's actually going into the bye. I think he was like fifth among all receivers in red zone targets, 8 or 9 on the season. I know he's got 6 targets inside the 10-yard line, which is one of the highest totals in the league, even following his bye. So he's getting very high value targets. He's on the field all the time. And again, Jared Goff has been targeting him constantly. Could it diminish when they get some guys back? Yeah, it could. But I think he's leapfrogged DJ Chark, at least. So, like, whatever your plans were for Chark, that you can apply that to Reynolds. And so I think at least that value will hold.
Yeah, I like that call. I agree. I think he's leapfrogged DJ Chark, he's whatever, DJ Chark. And Josh Reynolds just always produces with Jared Goff. So love to see that. All right, quarterbacks and tight ends here, Andy. There's no season saver in this group, that's for sure. Although maybe one of your tight ends, Daniel Bellinger, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, there's some fun tight ends to talk about. I don't have much for you at quarterback that is really going to fix your fantasy problems. Marcus Mariota was the guy that I actually blurbed in the column. His upcoming schedule is actually pretty fantastic. So as a guy who can get you through, you know, whether you have a need in week 7 or a week at almost any point into December, let me give you the list of games upcoming for Marcus Mariota. It starts with Cincinnati, a team that, you know, Andy Dalton and the junior varsity Saints just put up like 26 on. Then Carolina, then the Chargers, then Carolina again, then Chicago, then Washington, then Pittsburgh. Like there's just not a defense that we try to stay away from. It is a super friendly slate of games. He doesn't actually pass a whole lot, right? Like in a pass happy week, we're talking like 24, 25 attempts, but he just completed, like he just had one of those games where he had more touchdown passes than incompletions. He went 13 for 14. The interesting thing about Mariota from a fantasy perspective, of course, is that he now has 3 games with 50 plus rushing yards. He has 3 rushing touchdowns on the season. So he was, you know, however many years ago when Mariota came into the league, we thought he was going to be this super exciting dual threat guy. And then he didn't quite run enough. Well, they're definitely running him now. So we're getting some fun weeks on the ground from him. So I think he's somebody with a bunch of friendly spots coming up. He's probably going to spike a few times here. He's probably going to have some duds in there as well. Again, I don't mean to say that he's like a permanent answer, but as we get into some thorny bye weeks, I think he's pretty interesting. Matt Ryan also out there. We've talked about him enough. Daniel Jones kind of had a day, made some really nice throws. Really low ceiling guy, but he's got Jacksonville coming up. There's opportunities there. And if they actually fix some things at receiver and they get Wandale Robinson a little bit more involved and actually playing like a significant percentage of the snaps, that is perhaps going to help the Giants passing game as well. But I mean, Jones is another guy that we're really kind of counting on the rushing contributions to boost his fantasy value. At tight end, Robert Tonyan had a day. My dog was super excited, huge Tonyan fan. Double digit receptions in that one, 90 yards. And it's such a dreadful receiving core, right? Like, and then they lost, you know, we'd already been joking about how, like, all those targets a week ago to Randall Cobb, that was kind of a cry for help. And then Randall Cobb goes down. So they're going to have to feed Robert Tonyan. There's just not that many guys that Rodgers has, like, deep, substantial rapport with, and Tonyan is one of them. So I think he's going to be, I think he's a guy who can probably finish out this season as a top 10 fantasy tight end, which is not asking a whole lot within the context of this year. You mentioned Daniel Bellinger. They're keeping him involved. There's another touchdown for him. Caught all of his targets this past week. Pretty interesting player who they seem to really, really like when they get inside the 10. So there's probably a bunch more touchdowns there. He's an interesting upside player. Mike Gesicki just had what will undoubtedly be his best game of the year. I gotta mention him because he scored two touchdowns. He is, of course, he's nowhere near Tyreek and Jalen Waddle in terms of the receiving hierarchy there, but he is surely going to have a few more games where he finds the end zone. And then I always like to throw in Evan Ingram, who I think is I don't know. I just have a weakness for Evan Ingram. He's got a revenge game coming up against his former employer.
There we go.
Yeah. If you like to play that card, it is definitely in play this week.
I like Daniel Bellinger a lot. That was the one that stood out to me. You know, he's got three end zone targets the last 2 weeks, 81.3% routes per drop back last week. Just trending in the right direction. I love the Giants offense is really fun, man. Like Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka are just kind of willing to throw anything against the wall. I think Wandale Robinson's a big part of that too, because he's like going to be a gadgety kind of sort of create a touch player that they clearly like when you watch the, you know, it's kind of tough to understand the Wandale Robinson pick because he went so high ahead of other guys that I think will probably play real receiver a bit more than Wandale
Robinson.
I will
say that it matches his production. Like if you believe that production was legit, I mean, shoot, 100 catches, 1,400 scrimmage yards. Like it was great.
For sure. And I think it was just tough to envision him in like a real slot receiver type of way. But then you watch the Giants offense so far and some of the stuff they've done with these, you know, just NFL bottom feeder receivers. And you're like, oh, I get it. You know, I get what they see there with Wandale Robinson. We're going to transition to drops and you're going to talk about a guy, Isaiah McKenzie here, like Wandale Robinson is like the good version of Isaiah McKenzie. And obviously there was connective tissue there with Brian Daboll coming from Buffalo. But yeah, let's move on to our drops here and let's hit on Isaiah McKenzie, who's your nomination here.
Yeah, there's just no way that I'd hold him going into a bye week. Number one, that was already kind of sketchy. And then he just played such a terrible game.
I know.
He was horrible. had a couple balls that he should have come up with. Just an absolutely, absolutely miserable game. Fell down in the end zone on a target. Like, I don't know how they don't go to Khalil Shakir after that. And I didn't think that Shakir's game was perfect a couple weeks ago, but he did find the end zone. Why are we spending end zone targets on Isaiah McKenzie if he loses his footing like that and he can't, like, if you can't bring those in, you probably shouldn't play. It's tough because
Shakir's a real receiver. Yes. McKenzie is not, I think.
Yeah. McKenzie, like a kick returner of a receiver who made an interesting transition and has had some really nice moments and some really nice games. But in the biggest game on their schedule so far, he was really a no-show. And so I think Shakir certainly deserves a longer look. I also put almost any Jets receiver into this mix too. And like, really, really fun game for the Jets. Like you want to talk about a team that runs some fun stuff. Like they run some fun plays. Zach Wilson was just, they won in spite of their quarterback this past week who Zach Wilson's still so hard for me. Cause he had some moments where like he escaped a rush in a really kind of fun way. And you were like, oh, that was really well done, Zach Wilson. Now let's throw it out of bounds and get out of here. And then he would chuck it into coverage and like risk everything for a really low probability play. Like he's just a really rough watch. It's been bad with even Garrett Wilson. Elijah Moore is tweeting about his own frustrations. Elijah Moore tweeting about, was it on Twitter or Instagram? I don't know, but I saw the
it
comments.
It was Twitter.
That were basically, I'm not going to complain because we're winning, but just know that, you know, basically if we weren't winning, you would hear from me.
100%. It was like I'm not saying, I'm just saying type of thing from Elijah Moore, who had zero targets last week. I put Romeo Doubs as a drop with kind of a question mark because You know, I think like with Mike or with Randall Cobb going to miss some time. I'm not 100% sure if I believe that, but also like not much in the Packers offense behind Lazard really working at this point in the receiving game. I really wanted to piggyback your point on Jets receivers here because I love these Jets receivers. I love Garrett Wilson. Elijah Moore is one of my guys, but they're winning with a defense and running game first identity. Yeah. And like Zach Wilson just kind of along for the ride, which isn't the worst thing in the world for Zach Wilson's development, but like it is what it is right now. If something changes in 4 weeks and like, oh, now they're passing the ball and it's looking good. And like Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson are involved. Sure. Go pick them back up. You can't afford to do that with all of these guys that you've mentioned on buys.
Yeah. You certainly can't play them right now. Right. And pretty much anybody that you can't play and isn't even, I don't know, maybe Garrett Wilson can be a trade sweetener, but he's not like the centerpiece of a fantasy trade. And guys that you can't play and can't deal, like they're all drops.
Yeah. 100%. All right. Let's move to Hold On Loosely. We've got two Harmon guys here. You've got Curtis Samuel and I gave the State of the Allen Robinson Union address last night with Scott. Scott kindly let me go on and on and on about it. I think Robinson, who I know every fantasy analyst other than me told you it was okay to drop. But you know, I'm a firmly compromised source on this one, like not a reliable narrator at all with the Allen Robinson thing. But I'm going to go ahead and keep him on the, like, you should hold on to Allen Robinson through the bye week. If he's on your waiver wire, I would think about picking him up. But, you know, I think he looked really good last week. I think it's been overstated how bad he's looked as an individual the last, you know, to start the season. So I think you hold on to Allen Robinson. Andy, you think the people should hold on to Curtis Samuel?
Yeah. I mean, I'm enough of a believer in Allen Robinson that I think I'd hold on to him if I invested in him. Still, obviously, a good football player. The volume isn't necessarily there, but I don't know. Maybe he was, you know, I think it was Robinson that blocked, threw a great block on that Skoranek touchdown. Like, just a good football player is not going to come off the field. I listed Curtis Samuel here, and such a transitional moment for the Washington offense. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like with Heinicke. Obviously, Samuel wasn't really part of what they did last year. I want to say that Curtis Samuel has led that team in targets like in every single week.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard to go away from that. I'm holding on, and I like
not even in my wildest fever dream, Andy. Not even in my wildest fever dream.
I have a fair amount of Curtis Samuel because I really reacted to the performances in the first couple weeks of the season, and so I'm still scarred by the Thursday nighter. I mean, if you're in the NFL and a pass hits you in both hands, you've got to come down with it. He had a touchdown it's the classic play that I don't think gets called a drop, right? He had to leave his feet, but it was definitely one that you expect a good receiver to bring in. And then he definitely had a drop that hit him in the jersey.
There was a definite drop, yeah.
Yeah, there was a clear drop minutes after the touchdown that he should have come up with. So it was a really rough spot for him, really rough game. He's still seeing a ton of targets, and every time he's on the field, he's basically involved. So I would just wait and see how this Heinicke thing works. But he is the kind of player that I totally understand if you're just mad. You're just mad that you didn't get that touchdown and you want to cut him, but I wouldn't do it just yet.
No, I wouldn't either. And all of Curtis Samuel's value this year has been as like a design touches layup throw guy. Heinicke's going to take those plays even more than Wentz. Like, I'm sure they're
right
hammering into Carson, like, you need to take these layup throws. Heinicke will actually just do it because that's about all he can do. So I think that could be good news for Curtis Samuel. Getting in early, guys, Andy, not surprisingly, we have a bunch of rookies. I've got Pacheco, Greg Dulcich, who plays tonight for me, who probably doesn't qualify anymore because I think he is, as we're recording this, we're finding out he is going to play here in week 6, it sounds like. But still, I mean, so much of that Denver offense has, for whatever reason, been like, how can we get our dusty tight ends like deep passes up the seam? Greg Dulcich is the guy they actually want doing that. Clearly not Albert Zero, as Dalton Del Don has been calling him. So I think Dulcich makes sense. You've got Jameson Williams and always forever Rashad White in this segment.
Yeah, I just always like to remind people that Rashad White is still playing. And if anything were to happen to Leonard Fournette, he's in a great spot. And I don't think we're still not at a point where people are fighting you over Rashad White in the waiver chase. Williams is a guy that you can still stick in IR, right? Like, I don't know when he comes back. I don't have any updated information on Jameson Williams. I just know that he was as talented as any receiver in his draft class, a total burner, and is going to be really fun when he's fully operational for the Lions. I don't know when that's going to be, but if you play with an IR spot, you've got one open right now. There's just no reason not to have Williams in it. He's one of those guys who, you know, maybe it doesn't happen for him this year at all. That wouldn't be crazy. It wouldn't even be all that disappointing, given the timing of the injury. But he is a guy with an opportunity to pop in December, and we've certainly seen that from Lions wide receivers before.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that call. Just one thing too, before we move to the Treviso Babes segment. It's so funny how fantasy works, man. Like, I know this is our job to talk about it and be really accurate in forecasts and all that. It's like, I'm thinking about just this morning, like Ken Walker. If you drafted Ken Walker, some people probably dropped him because he got hurt, right? And like, that's why he picked him up. There's a scenario where Rashad Penny just never gets hurt, and then Ken Walker's the guy that, like, 3 weeks from now, people are like, hey, when can I drop Ken Walker? Like, he's doing nothing, blah, 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 blah. Now he's like, people that have Ken Walker are going to moonwalk to their fantasy title. Like, Isaiah Pacheco, Rashad White, same thing. Like, maybe nothing ever happens, but that's just how, like, the one guarantee in the NFL is chaos. Like, that's it.
Yep.
I can sit here and tell you to trust talent at receiver, and people can come back and say, like, that worked for Devontae Smith. It's not working for Elijah Moore, right? The one thing is chaos. So try to benefit and set yourself up to benefit from chaos as much as possible, holding these backup running backs. Even if it never amounts to anything, it could amount to something, and that does matter. All right, Andy, can you guess who got dropped in my mom's league this week? I'll give you a hint before we recap the biggest news in the Treviso Babes League. Starting running back for a great team got dropped, and another running back who just got a big opportunity handed to him prior to this week was dropped. Can you guess these two players?
Oh my gosh. Running back who got a big opportunity handed to him. It can't be Ken Walker, right?
No, not Ken Walker.
Let's see if I can get either one of these. Was Devin Singletary dropped? Was he the starting running back for a great team?
No, that's a good guess, but no.
It wasn't Miles Sanders.
No. And by the way, now you're down to, there's only one more great team left in the NFL.
I know, we're quickly running out of great teams. Was it CEH?
It was CEH. Yeah, CEH was dropped. I have no idea why, but CEH was dropped. Someone must have read the sell high, like all those sell high arguments about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like,
sell high means drop, right?
Yeah, just get his ass out of here as fast as possible.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
And then the other guy who just got a big opportunity was Daryl Henderson. So I guess someone in this league read the news on Cam Akers and was like, you know what? Character issues all throughout that backfield. Maybe they're trying to get rid of Cam Akers. Daryl Henderson is next. I'll go ahead and get it. So I have no idea what happened there. Cam Akers also dropped as well. But the big news, and I didn't even save this for the podcast for people out there. I had to text Andy immediately as soon as I saw this in my mom's league. Somebody added Antonio Brown.
It's just amazing.
I mean, he's not even on a team.
It's not like he hasn't been in the news. He has been in the news, and he has not been connected to an NFL team. It is a wild ad.
In the state of Florida, too, where all these ladies live, you know, I mean, that one is for the record books, the Antonio Brown ad. Not even like, I don't even think there was a corresponding move with adding Antonio Brown. It was just
had somebody, a spot. We'll take a shot.
Yeah, and like I said to you, you mean you made the point. I was like, hey, maybe somebody ran into Antonio Brown in this league, and like, oh, they had to, you know, maybe they got some good intel. Well, you know, normally, as you said, running into Antonio Brown in public is never goes well for anybody.
Yeah, that would be an unusually positive interaction with Antonio Brown for sure.
Yeah, Tammy's top notch team was the one to add him, and she was 1-4 heading into this week. So clearly, she's just compromising values and character and moral standing to try to claw her way out of 11th place. So she got a win this week over Julie's Astounding team. So shout out to her; it worked.
I mean, we got to get Tammy on the pod. We got to talk to Tammy about this.
Tammy, I don't know Tammy. I'm familiar with a few of these ladies in this league. You know, my mom has moved down to Florida in the last like, you know, the last year and a half. Like, it's like she's meeting all new friends. Like, she's gone off. It's the reverse of like when she sent me off to college. It's like I've sent her off to college. And who are all my sister and I, like, who is Leslie? Who is it? Like, who is that? So I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know, Tammy, but clearly, yeah, I gotta get her on the pod. We gotta figure out her deal there. But Andy, that was a packed show. A lot of stuff to talk about, despite the dusty waiver wire this week. Can't thank you enough for joining me and getting all through it, man. I mean, like I said, a lot of stuff to talk about.
I promise the people that the names are going to be better next week. They can't be worse.
Well, let's hope. You know, I said it can't be worse than Sam Darnold for DJ Moore, and I was wrong about that. It can always be worse, Andy. Don't you forget that. That is going to do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. If you don't, what are you doing with your life? You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your life, your mental well-being by following at Yahoo Fantasy. You won't regret it. I will promise that. Austin Eckler will be back tomorrow after playing against the Denver Broncos tonight, and we'll talk about it all on a very new episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.